Hello, everyone. I am sheepishly recording this episode, I think a year after my last episode was published. Okay, so in my defense, I have not been twiddling my thumbs or forgetting about my peeps in the land of high sensitivity. I am still very invested. What I have been doing in the last year is essentially pouring all of my time and my resources into building my private practice so that it can be more of a kind of a, well, the primary focus of all of my attention and the work, capital W, that I do. And so I went from being a full-time employee to a full-time entrepreneur, which, holy cow, that was a shit show. I shouldn't even really say that. That's a little too extreme. But what I will say is I discovered something about myself in that journey. I discovered that I'm actually very similar to, well, I need to pause here. I'm about to talk about a podcast episode I listened to some months ago. And the podcast episode was hosted by Lex Fridman. And if you do not know who Lex Fridman is, as selfishly as I might want you to stay on my podcast, I kind of think for your best interest, you should pause here, go into wherever it is you're listening to your podcast, look up Lex Fridman, and promptly begin listening to just any episode that you want. Because he is a truly phenomenal podcast host and a sensational human. And if he is not, in fact, a sensational human, he is marvelous at faking it. So he had Susan Cain, who, if you don't know who she is, also pause, stop, whatever, download her audiobook, Quiet, The Power of Introverts that in a World That Won't Stop Talking, and or her book, Bittersweet. I forget what the byline for that was, but it's all about the experience of the bittersweetness of life. Both of them are fabulous. So, there you go. If you haven't heard of either of those two people, go look them up. If you haven't read her books, please do so. Anyway, so the two of them were having a conversation, and in it, she talked about her process moving from a full-time employee as an attorney into the land of becoming a writer. He inquired politely. I mean, he wasn't like, he's a very inquisitive person, but he was curious, you know, why not just go fully into writing? Why? Because she went from full-time lawyer to part-time, I think, consultant plus writing. And perhaps now she's full-time writer. I'm not sure, but he was curious, why not just leap directly into writing? And her answer was, I am someone who, if I'm worried about how to pay my mortgage, I won't be able to be as creative. So I needed a foundational amount of income so that I could have the bandwidth for creativity. And he responded by saying, oh, interesting. I'm exactly the opposite. I need my feet to the fire or else I won't be motivated. I won't get the job done. And so a year ago, I was full-time employee and teeny tiny part of my life devoted, you know, any room I had left over was going to podcasting for the healthy sensitive, building my website, and having a very small and intimate and beloved private practice. And I thought, well, I'm just gonna flip the script on this. I'm gonna go fully into private practice. And I didn't know whether I would be more of a Lex Fridman type or more of a Susan Cain type. I couldn't know until I tried it out. Turns out I am oh so most definitely a Susan Cain. I mean, I was working my butt off, so it wasn't like I was paralyzed with fear. I just was finding that the flow of any time I did an intro session with a prospective client, I knew that emotionally I wasn't trying to be sort of needy, you know, please hire me, please, I really need to pay the rent. But I knew too that that was buried somewhere in there. So I was being very careful about the delivery of and the experience that I offered. But I mean, when you're working with highly sensitive people, these folks can smell bullshit from 5 miles away, not even 1 mile away. And if I'm sitting here and thinking, maybe possibly there's an agenda that's leaking into this sacred space that I don't want to be leaking in, that has to be felt on some level from them. And I was just not willing to tolerate that. So I then retreated back into where I could have a part-time role as an employee and now a part-time role in the Healthy Sensitive. And that was a much better balance. In the process of networking and building that out, I met, it's almost like a love story. And I've had this happen in my life a handful of times. And often when people describe these experiences, it's in the context of romantic love. And I am here to tell you, I have had the experience I'm about to share in the realm of romance and also in the realm of a friend. So, as an example, I've had that experience where you look across the room and you see someone that you just immediately become smitten with because all the hormones are raging. And then you have a conversation and you think, I don't know exactly how this is going to look, but I know that you're super important and I just can't wait. Like, I hope you, I don't just like you. I like you like you. Do you like me or do you just like me or do you not like me at all? That sort of zzzz experience. Totally had it in the realm of romance, but everybody knows about that. I have also had it in a select few experiences with some of my most cherished friendships. I don't want to name names because that's just rude, but in one instance I met through work where we were sort of meshed together, and I was an intern and this person was sort of overseeing my internship, and we went out to do a presentation together in the community, a health educator at the time. I was a health educator at the time, or at least studying to be. And she and I get to start talking, and we have all of these shared interests and preferences. And it was almost this moment where I just looked at her and it's like, oh, you're my people. It's that. It's like when you meet someone and you think, oh, you're my people. I hope you like me as much as I like you, because if not, it'll break my little heart. And it's okay, but And that's happened on a few occasions, and I'm still deeply in love with these humans because it's this, again, not romantic love, but in some ways so much deeper. So having said that, in the last year, in one of these networking experiences, I go, and remember, I'm a coach, so I am a certified life coach as well as a certified health coach, and I have a master's in health education. So the way these have all kind of blended together alongside my temperament. So I am introverted and I am a highly sensitive person and I'm a sensation seeker. Now, I'm not labeling these I'm not using these labels to imagining that they encapsulate the fullness of who I am, because no label could. But these are just traits that I've over time allowed to be a way I describe my experience. And so at any rate, all of these things kind of coalesce together into me developing a private practice where I often will say I'm a burnout coach. I help move people who are, and I work specifically with highly sensitive people and quite frequently with those who are trying to figure out how to lean into their strengths as a highly sensitive person while honoring their ambitions and doing all of that without burning themselves out. So the short and sweet version that I often will say is I'm a burnout coach. I work with highly sensitive people and I help them move from burnout to flow. That's my short and sweet version. So I'm giving you all of this backstory because then I go into a networking event and one of the presenter for that particular, you know, Chamber of Commerce meeting is a nurse practitioner. And it just so happens that she's going to be doing a presentation on burnout. And this woman, and she's up at the front, and I cannot keep my eyes off of this human. There are humans like this. I know you've seen and or probably met them where they are just captivating. Like they light up a room. Men, women, sometimes it's romantic, but often it's not. It's just that some people are naturally just sparky. They light up the room just by existing in it. That was this female. So she's giving her presentation and I am sitting back going, I don't know if you will have any interest in meeting me, but I would also very much like to be seated across the table having a meal with you. So keep in mind, though, I'm an introvert. And it was already kind of hard for little sensitive introverted Leah to get her butt over to the Chamber of Commerce. It was new at the time. It was new to me. It was new for me to do this thing. And I had to cheer myself on. It was like, come on, Leah, put your big girl pants on. You're going to go to this meeting. You're going to sit in a chair. You're going to have a nice lunch. You're going to smile at other humans. You're going to shake some hands, hand out a business card or two. And that's all you have to do. Then you get to go home. Like, you can do it, Leah. You can do it. So I did the thing. And I am not even kidding. I wanted to go up and say hi after her presentation was done. And I thought, no. I was almost like the teenager who has a crush on the quarterback or something. It's like, you're way too cool for me. I can't. So I left. I left the building, walked out, got to my car, and then stopped and thought, Leah Marie, this is ridiculous. It is a human being, and you might never get another chance to just chat with this person. You are going to march right back in that room. You're going to say hello, and you are going to say, if you would ever be interested in having a conversation, I would love to hear more about your practice. Who gets upset at that? She can say no. So I did. I marched right back into that building and I went up to her and with all of the courage I could muster said some version of, hi, so nice to meet you. I'm a health and wellness coach. Love what you do. I would love to see if we could, there's a lot of people I work with I think that you would be a great fit for, but I'd just love to hear more about your practice. Here's my card. We have a conversation later on. And she, of course, could not have been more gracious. And I, it was like, it's fine. Maybe she was just being nice. That's okay. But I was so proud of me. Guys, so proud. It's like, you have no idea. I walked back out and I'm like, I did a hard thing. For those more extroverted people out there who may just so also happen to be sensitive, you may be listening to this and thinking, what's the big deal? It's not hard. It was a conversation, but for my fellow introverts, I think you all understand. We get it. We get how hard this is. Anyway, she and I have a conversation later, and if I wasn't already in love with this human before, now I am full throttle smitten. Like, I'm sitting across, and there's like goo goo eyes, and it's like, oh, I really don't want to be the needy person, but I'm so going to be the needy person and hope that we can be friends. That was happening inside my headspace. And we ultimately did start to collaborate on projects together, and it has now unfolded into building a new business. So she has her business, her private practice. I have my private practice, and now we are collaborating together and building a business together. And I'll tell you the details about it as it unfolds more, but because it's too much. It would be its own podcast episode, and I'm just so flippin' excited about it. So that's why I have been MIA for over a year. I went through the roller coaster ride of, I'm going to be an entrepreneur. Just kidding. This is way too much. So now I'm going to be partially entrepreneur. But ooh, wait, even this doesn't feel quite right. To now I'm going to be a part-time employee and an entrepreneur who's working on two different businesses. And I could not be happier. I am thrilled. Oddly, it has a weird kind of balance. I mean, whatever balance means in this day and age. I feel hopeful and exuberant, and I am like squealing. I want to tell you so much about what's going on, and yet if I tell you about it now, it's not fully fleshed out yet. I mean, it is, but it isn't. My God, I sound like whatever it is I'm on are really good drugs. I don't think I even had, okay, green tea. I had green tea. Anyway, so that is my sort of letting you all know why I have been gone so long. I'm back. I promise. Sorry about being gone so long. So, what are we talking about today? Kind of a weird transition, except maybe not. So, today what I want to be talking about is boundaries. The reason why I don't feel like this transition is quite so odd is that in order for me to have kind of navigated this whole wide sweep of I'm working as an employee. Now I'm not working as an employee. Now I'm an employee-ish with a business. Now I'm an employee-ish with two. I have had to get really, really good at communicating effectively, with myself and with others. I like how I'm saying that. I maybe need to rephrase that. I am in the process of refining my boundaries with myself and with others so that I can communicate effectively with, you know, what these boundaries are. And when I'm talking about boundaries, because this comes up all the time, I lead a monthly meetup group, which, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you ever want to come to my virtual meetup group, it's once a month. It's the last Wednesday of each month. It is in meetup.com. It's the Healthy Sensitives, and it goes from about 6 to 7:30, again, last Wednesday of every month, just FYI. I'll put that in the notes. Moving on. So this comes up quite often. How do I communicate with other people what my preferences are when most people maybe can't relate to my preferences and to my experiences? How can I describe what it is to be a highly sensitive person without feeling like I'm becoming Wikipedia on high sensitivity, and without making it seem like I have some kind of a diagnosis, and without making other people feel bad as if I'm saying, well, I'm sensitive and so therefore you aren't? The languaging is kind of wonky, and I get it. And what I'm discovering about myself is, now I think I've mentioned at some point, I'm sure I've said at some point in my podcast, I am kind of a creature of two extremes. I'm a highly sensitive person on the one hand, and I am a sensation seeker on the other. And these are traits that any human, like all human beings, fall in the spectrum of, but they are not in any way, shape, or form correlated. So sensitivity is one spectrum, sensation seeking is another. One can be easily be someone who is not sensitive and who is a sensation seeker. Often those are the folks, you know, climbing without any harness on a mountaintop. You can also be someone who is sensitive and not a sensation seeker. These are your folks that will happily sit in a really comfy chair with a book in hand in their home and have no desire to leave. That's their happy place. I'm being a little bit stereotypical here, but I'm just kind of trying to create imagery here. I am the kind of person who my sensitivity is high, which means I'm sensitive to risk. So I don't like, you know, I have a depth of processing in the way I think about things. I'm easily amused, meaning, but I'm also easily over-aroused. Like, I don't need a whole lot to feel entertained. I have emotional sensitivity, and I am a sensation, like a sensory sensitive. So I don't love really bright lights. I can tolerate things that I dislike. So I'm not saying that I can't be in a space that's loud, or that I can't work in under fluorescent lighting, or that I can't tolerate uncomfortable emotions by other people. That's not it at all. It's just that my preferences, if we're talking about kind of an arousal window that's in like primo, that's perfection, I just need my life, the volume of my life, to be turned down a little bit to be truly in a place of joy. So if I'm in a library, I'll be much more content than if I'm in Vegas, as an example. I can go to Vegas, and it's fine, but I just don't love it. There's an example. So I'm also a sensation seeker. As a sensation seeker, that means I like novelty. So which means I'm sensitive to rewards. So I'm both sensitive to risk as well as sensitive to reward. So that means I love novelty. I love traveling to new places. I love embarking on an adventure. I like trying new things. I like engaging in challenging things. So you can imagine we're driving this vehicle would be a little difficult. This is part of the reason I've had to craft a life where I have a part-time job that's relatively reliable and consistent and, you know, routine, while also having my foot in the realm of entrepreneurship, which is all novelty and challenge and growth and flow and stretching and so on. And this balance has, so far at least, been working really well for me. I'm like, it feels like it fits me, and it's dynamic, and I can adjust, and I can be flexible, and it's really marvelous. I feel extremely lucky. In order to make this balance work, though, I'm seeing over and over and over again how important it is for me to be perpetually checking in. Is this okay, or is this not okay? Am I willing to extend myself this far, or is this too far? And in my conversations, I find this fascinating. In the place where I work, that is my part-time role as a health educator, people are repeatedly coming up and saying, I need to know more information about boundaries. in my private practice, I'm hearing people say, I need to know more information about boundaries. So I'm loving this because I kind of feel like that whole law of attraction thing, you know, you don't attract what you want, you attract what you are. I don't know I'm not informed enough to speak to the science of it. All I can tell you is that my subjective experience seems to validate it. Because holy moly, like if the struggles people are having when they say it to me, I'm just nodding my head going, uh-huh, like mouth open, drool coming on the side, like me too. And so this is what has led me to start doing a bit of deep diving into this concept of boundaries. Because people say the word all the time, but what the fuck does it even mean? I mean, really though, when I say boundaries, most people get, oh yeah, boundaries, yeah, yeah. But they don't, if you ask them to parcel it out and create definitions that are tangible, that's where most of us end up at a loss. So I'm going to talk about like what are boundaries, the types of boundaries that exist, why boundaries are important to our health, particularly as highly sensitive people, but not exclusively for HSPs. It's important for all Homo sapiens, how to build those boundaries and then how to communicate them. So that's what I'm going to be covering. In terms of the classic definition that I love the most, this is now coming from Brené Brown. And if there is anyone on my podcast who does not know who Brené Brown is, I don't know where you've been and or forget about my podcast. How have you not heard of this woman? Again, stop listening to my podcast. Go look up Brené Brown and then spend I don't even know how many hours of content she has. Just go do it. She has a PhD in social work, she's a licensed social worker and a PhD in I don't know. She's got a lot of alphabet soup after her name. Very smart cookie and has spoken at length about vulnerability and shame. And she's made claims that people now call her Boundaries Brown, which she loves. She was asked, what is a boundary? And her response was, a boundary is simply what is okay and what is not okay. Now, if you want to get real technical with it, you can go into the American Psychology, the APA defines in its definition, and it's defining a boundary as a clear line that protects the integrity of an individual or group, or that helps the person or group set realistic limits on participation in a relationship or activity. I will say that again. A boundary is a clear line that protects the integrity of an individual or group, or that helps the person or group set realistic limits on participation in a relationship or activity. That seems like a pretty good definition. I'm into it. So what are areas in our lives where boundaries would be important? Maybe the better question is, what are areas in our lives where they wouldn't be important? But at any rate, the areas I'm going to cover are physical boundaries, relational boundaries, intellectual/emotional boundaries, material, and then time. So we're starting with the physical. Physical boundaries. This is knowing how, when, and in what context you want to be touched, if at all. It's being clear about what you want in your physical space. Knowing what kinds of food and drink you're comfortable consuming and or being around. Knowing when you want to be active and when you want to be at rest. And then having an environment that promotes the kinds of behaviors you want to engage in at any given time. So a physical boundary is when you're able to say, when someone says, oh, I'd like to give you a hug. Hi. If you're able to say, I'm sorry, I'm not a hugger. Can we shake hands? You're right. That's you asserting a physical boundary. If you're being clear about what you want in your physical space, like, I don't know, someone comes in and is like, hey, I want to bring a friend. Maybe you have a roommate and the roommate's like, hey, I'm bringing someone over, and you don't want anyone over. You would say, I'm not in a place right now where I want humans in my physical space. That's a physical boundary. And then the knowing what kinds of foods and drinks you're comfortable consuming or being around. This one's kind of obvious, but you know, your friend says, would you like a drink? And you say, no, thank you. Ta-da. There was one example of where this came up that just blew me away. So I went to a brunch. A guy I was dating at the time his mother was hosting the brunch. She made a phenomenal brunch. It was like out of this world. One of the other guests brought dessert, which was just, I couldn't fathom eating a bite of anything that more than what I'd eaten. And he, not my person that I was dating, but this guest, says, "But you have to have dessert." I said, "No, I don't." He says, "Oh, come on, I'm going to cut you a piece." "You can cut me a piece, but I won't eat it." "No, no, no, but you have to." "Nope, really don't." He cuts the piece. He puts it on a plate. He puts it in front of me. And I continued to have the conversation, and I continued not to eat the pie. This is a physical boundary. Nothing goes into any orifice of my body without my express permission. And at some point, the person I was dating got uncomfortable enough where he just kind of thought, "Oh, hell with it. I'll eat this stupid thing." He eats it. We leave. And he later then addresses the issue and says, "Leah, it really wasn't that big a deal. Why didn't you just eat the stupid pie?" To which I said something very similar, where it's like, I do not put anything in any orifice of my body that I don't want there. So these are examples of physical boundaries. The social boundaries are, like, this is especially helpful for introverts, for maybe HSPs. It's like the number of social events that you want to attend, the size of those social circles, the level of socializing you feel comfortable with, the kinds of people that you might feel comfortable socializing with. So as an example, I always thought that I was a total 100% introvert, but really what I mean by that is hermit. I thought, I'm a hermit. I don't ever want to have to go and do things with humans if, in fact, I need to recharge. That's just how it is. If I want to recharge, the only way I do that is in solitude. It doesn't mean I don't like people or that I wouldn't enjoy being in the company of others. It's that when I'm tired, I can rely on the fact that to recharge, I would have to do it in solitude. But I had committed to going to this Spanish meetup group, and I was really trying not to be flaky because it was a problem. It was, you know, where I do the thing where it's like, I'll totally go to the thing. And then the day of the thing comes and it's like, well, but I said yes a week ago and I was younger then and full of hope. So, and then I'd flake out and not go to the thing. So this time it's like, Leah, put your big girl pants on here. Go to the thing. I went. I was almost in tears because I was so tired. I didn't want to do this, but I had promised and I said I would do it. I go, I sit, I chat in Spanish with people who were very compassionate with me about my toddler kind of level of Spanish ability. And by the time the hour was done, I felt better than when I had arrived. So that was way outside of my data pool. Like, it was messing with my data big time because I was so sure that, nope, I can only recharge alone. But it turns out that provided a social environment has not a ton of people, so in this case it was about 5 or 6, it happened to have been in a pretty quiet environment. It was in a cafe. It was for a set period of time, so it was understood that we would all be meeting for an hour. It really wasn't a problem. In fact, it had helped. I felt better. Well, if that's true, then maybe my issue isn't that I can't socialize when I'm tired. Maybe it's just that I have to set some clear boundaries around my preferences regarding the amount of socializing I want to do, with how many people, and where those events take place. But I was only ever going to be able to learn that by experimenting. So this is part of the challenge with boundary setting too. A lot of time when I talk about boundaries, I notice that there's some shame that kicks in, particularly from HSPs, because they'll say, yeah, I know, I'm terrible. I totally am a doormat. And I should have known better. And, you know, calm down. That might not be true. It may be that you extended yourself to the extreme because you needed to in order to know where the boundary was. So this is not a cut and dry thing. We aren't born and then knowing exactly what's okay and what's not okay. We often need to go and explore and kind of, you know, like, is this okay? It's like, ooh, sticking my finger in an electricity socket, not a good idea. Like, okay, that's a boundary we learn to have. going to big parties in high school. Like, no, I learned pretty quickly that that's not my jam. But if I hadn't been willing to push myself to go to that Spanish meetup, I might never have gotten the data that could reveal to me that, in fact, my boundary is a little bit more flexible than perhaps I originally thought. So, and the next in the realm is emotional boundaries. So, can you take ownership of your own feelings without making other people responsible for intuiting them? This, my beloved HSPs, does happen to us because we generally, I shouldn't say we, most of those I know who identify as HSPs, and this includes myself, have a tendency to be relatively good at empathizing with others. That doesn't mean we do it perfectly, but just on average, we aren't terrible at predicting what the likely emotion is that the person across from us is feeling. We aren't always right, but we're right more often than the average person is right, let's say. So if that's your whole lived experience, it's really easy to unconsciously assume that that's what all humans are doing and or are capable of. So we can sometimes build some resentment because, well, we were able to intuit their emotions. Why can't they do it for us? And honestly, most of the time, the answer is they might not have had the ability, or even if they generally do, they might not have had the bandwidth that particular day. And finally, it's not actually okay to insist that other people intuit your needs. That's called being a child. So I'm saying this not to, you know, chastise you all, but to chastise the version of me that at one point in my life thought it was okay to insist that other people figure out what it is I need. Because dang it, I do it for them. And that's called codependency. Don't do that. So anyway, when you take ownership of your own feelings without imagining that other people are supposed to intuit them, you are being clear about an emotional boundary. People who have healthy emotional boundaries know how to avoid taking ownership of other people's emotions. So this is another big one that we HSPs have a tendency to do. We often will try and intuit others' emotions. Once we have made an assessment, we then think, oh, if they feel something that's negative, it must have something to do with me, and or it's my job now to fix it. That's not necessarily true, and it's not even necessarily welcome. A person with A person who is emotionally boundaried. A person with emotional boundaries. That's the way to say that. Anyway, people with healthy emotional boundaries are capable of validating other people's emotions without taking them on. So this is what happens when someone is breaking down in front of you. They're sobbing on the floor and you look at them and maybe you don't fully understand exactly why it is they're feeling what they're feeling. Maybe even they've told you why it is they're upset and you take it in and you kind of go, well, that wouldn't necessarily upset me in the same way, but okay. But you can look at them and say, wow, you're heartbroken. And they look up at you with tear-filled eyes and they say, yeah, I am. But you don't also become heartbroken as you recognize their hurt. So this is having an emotional boundary. You're not shying away from them going, ew, this is really uncomfortable. I'm going to go somewhere else. It's, wow, I see you. And I'm here. Someone who has good emotional boundaries can also communicate feelings without expecting other people to fix them. So this is someone who, you know, the classic, how are you feeling? I'm fine. Ugh, not helpful. Versus, how are you feeling? You know, actually, I had a really shitty day. This is not a good day. Can I do anything for you? Honestly, no, it's not you. I think I'm just going to have to ride this baby out. I'll fix it. So it's, I'm communicating what's going on, but I'm not expecting you to fix it. I'm allowed to make a request. So let's say if someone says, hey, I see you're having a hard time. Can I help you? I am allowed to say, actually, if you wouldn't mind doing the dishes, that would be incredible. Please, would you be willing to do that? I'm not saying, so that just because you've made a request doesn't mean that you don't have good emotional boundaries. It just means you're not expecting the other person to fix your emotions. It's, any emotion. It's the ability to acknowledge and hold space for any emotion without being afraid or being, you know, so you're able to hold the space for all the emotions, even the hard ones, and not insisting someone else fix them or even insisting that they need to be fixed. Hard emotions aren't wrong. They're just hard. That brings us into intellectual boundaries, which, you know, there's a lot of overlap, but intellectual boundaries refer to thoughts and ideas. So like healthy intellectual boundaries might include respect for others' ideas and an awareness of what an appropriate discussion could be. So examples of where you might hear this being said is, hey guys, it's Thanksgiving. We don't talk about politics or religion. Like, we're not going there. Or if you have made you're trying to create a container for people to talk about politics, you might say, okay. So an example that comes to mind is, I think it's Braver Angels. It's an organization that's trying to kind of depolarize our country. And the strategy they're using is getting people who identify as red and as blue into a space together to have hard conversations, not with the aim of changing minds, but with the aim of helping people see that it is okay. There could be a person who disagrees with me who nevertheless I can humanize and maybe even see their point of view. So I've had a lot of really marvelous conversations about like the pro-life, pro-choice debate. And I am on the side of pro-choice most of the time. And I've had really wonderful conversations with those who are pro-life, where I walk away from that thinking, well, I'm still feeling like I haven't moved from my side of the spectrum, but I don't see your side of the spectrum as adversarial. I only see it as different. So that's an example. Anyway, boundaries you might set. You might say, what is okay? It's okay to have disagreements on political views. It's okay to have an argument in the privacy of our home. It's okay for you to listen to heavy metal rock music. But you might say it's not okay to attack someone personally for their political views. It's not okay to have an argument out in public. It's not okay for you to force me to listen to your heavy metal rock music at 2 a.m. So these are examples of intellectual boundaries. Material boundaries. This is kind of similar to physical boundaries. The only real difference here is that you're talking about like stuff. So this is where you might have rules around your personal belongings, about your money, sharing resources or upkeep of those resources. So when you're talking about like if you have a roommate or if you're in a marriage or if you have kiddos and you're talking about what's mine or what's yours and what's okay and what's not okay, this is about your stuff. What's okay to share? What's not intended for sharing? What is yours? What is mine? How to respect each of our belongings? Things like that. And then the final one we're talking about here is time boundaries. This is where you're setting clear rules around work time versus family time. Parenthetical side note, this is one I have a lot of work to do with because I am so, obviously, I have a tendency of workaholicism. But it's from a good place, okay? Like, I just really love what I do. It's a good problem to have. And definitely do need to set some boundaries. Putting exercise and other self-care habits on the calendar, treating them like dental appointments, this would be an example of a time boundary. When people say, I would totally exercise, it's just I don't have time. Bull caca, you have the time. You're choosing not to allocate that time for this purpose, which is okay. If you don't want to exercise, it is your life. You're allowed to not want to exercise. If you do, this is one thing that I loved about, I believe it was in the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's that highly effective people don't prioritize their schedule. They schedule their priorities. So people who are highly effective in their sphere of life, they tend to be really good with time boundaries. They arrive on time for scheduled events. They communicate with others about their expectations around those timed events. And they make time for themselves, whatever that means to them. So why are boundaries important for our health? Well, they probably are going to help us improve our eating habits, improve our sleep, improve our commitment to exercise, reduce our harmful behaviors, improve our relationships, improve our communication. Like, boundaries help us live a life that we want to live. So like with healthy eating as an example, if like think of the person who says you should have pie and I'm saying, no, I don't want pie, but you need to have pie, but I don't want the pie, but here, I'll cut you a slice. Okay, you can cut all the slices. I'm not eating the pie. That was an example of how boundary was helpful with healthy eating. With exercise, now this is in the realm, like you have to have time management, some consistency, balancing other commitments, avoiding overtraining. Like having boundaries with food and exercise doesn't just have to be about being restrictive. It can also be about being flexible and about easing off. If I'm perpetually being super conscientious about my food to the point where I can't even enjoy social events because I'm too busy being an orthorexic about it, I don't even think that's technically yet in the DSM, but the phrase is used as a word to capture an unhealthy preoccupation with healthy eating. So it's like you're so obsessed with eating so perfectly clean that your joy for life is getting kind of stripped away. So you need to have boundaries around what you do and don't eat, but also about how restrictive you want to be around that. Exercise is very similar. You know, you want to have some consistency, set boundaries around it, but you also want to honor when your body is tired and giving yourself a rest day. As it happens, today is a rest day I'm taking, and it's driving me nuts balls because I'm usually someone who's just perpetually in movement. And more recently in my life, I've started to be more strategic about when to push and when to let go, like when to do a yoga stretch day and when to do more steps and hit and all of that. And I've had to set some boundaries with myself. So it's not just about pushing hard or restriction. Sleep. Oh, sleep. So an example that comes to mind here, and I think I've used it in episodes past, but it's been over a year as I sheepishly talk to you, my beloveds. So there is that. Don't remember if I told this story, but I was invited to a bridal shower because I was one of the bridesmaids and we were going to go to Disneyland. If you know anything about an HSP, that might not necessarily be my happy place. I have no qualms with Disneyland objectively, but it's just not going to bring me the same amount of joy that it might bring your typical extrovert, for example. So I knew that it would probably be something I enjoyed immensely, but would need to have plenty of recharge time in my own hotel room for. But I was invited to stay with a group of young women who would all be sleeping in one hotel room suite in the park. I get it. Sleeping in the park is kind of cool. However, I am not going to be sleeping in the same space with eight other females. Well, I wouldn't sleep in the space with eight other any homo sapiens, like male, female, non-binary, do not care. If you have lungs and you're alive and you're breathing, I don't want to be in the same space with you when I'm trying to sleep. If I don't have to. It's too many different sleep schedules I'm contending with, too many different noises, too many humans to worry about when I can't get sleep, if my futzing around is going to mess up their sleep. No. My sleep is sacred, and it took me years to get to the place where I could reliably get sleep. I'm protecting it. So this is now kind of, I set a boundary. I'm like, I will happily go to the bridal shower. I will happily go into the park. I will be a, you know, amenable, flexible, cheerful person, but I will be getting my own hotel room outside of the park. Thank you. It caused a little bit of friction, but ultimately people were able to say, okay, I get it. This is something that's been true of you for years. Fine. That was a boundary. Substances could be another one as it relates to health. So do you feel comfortable saying no to a second glass of wine? I have done this. I do it all the time. I remember I went to, like, I was dating a guy. I often say that I was dating the city itself. It was in San Francisco. I have such fond memories of this little, it was very brief. I think it was a couple months. But he was so just charming and gregarious, but also very cool-headed, like not spazzy by any stretch, very easygoing, but just had a lot of energy as well. I'm like, let's go here and here and bing and bing. And he had a number of friends. And it's like, let's go out here to this bar, to this bar. And I, to be clear, folks, I love whiskey. And I love a good, like, old-fashioned or Manhattan and all the things. My body, though, does not like all the things. So I can maybe get away with one drink. More than that, I mean, even one drink messes with my sleep. So, meh. But they wanted to have yet another drink. And I said, no, that's okay. But I love staying out with y'all. So I'm going to go ahead and order tea. And they teased me mercilessly for this. I mean, it was all in like good fun, but it's just like, I don't care. I'm not having another glass. You guys are going to have really crappy sleep and I'm going to have wonderful sleep with my chamomile. You guys can suck it. So that's an example of a boundary there. So then now it kind of getting zeroing back out. Like, what are boundaries? I gave a whole bunch of examples. So we went into different forms boundaries can take, why having boundaries is good for health. But kind of zeroing back out again, really, boundaries are about subtraction. You know, part of the reason I think that humans have a hard time with setting boundaries is that I think we are naturally geared toward addition. Like, it's just easier to add 5 + 3 than it is to subtract 7 - 4. We can do both. It just takes longer for the brain to do subtraction. You'll notice too, when we're trying to lose weight, quote unquote, we often go toward exercise first before wanting to reduce our calories. When we need more money, we often go first toward trying to make more rather than spend less. I don't know what that's about, but it's something funky going on in the psychology of humans, because this seems to be fairly universal, at least with the people I know. Like, adding is intuitive. Subtraction requires a little bit more effort. So given that that's how we're wired, it kind of makes sense to me that boundaries might be challenging for us, because on some level it's about subtraction. It's being willing to say no to something so that you have room for a more enthusiastic yes. And in order to do that, you know, a framework I often give is to think like a city planner. So this is with the coach that I work with. She's lovely. And she often said, you know, in a city that we all know and love, what makes a city lovable is when it has green spaces. So like with San Francisco, it has Golden Gate Park. With Manhattan, it has Central Park. You name a city that is beloved, and I will show you that there are green zones in it somewhere. Or at least, if not technically green, I mean, a space where there is intentionally, it has been an intentional plan not to build on it. In a similar way, we need to create green spaces in our lives. So for highly sensitive people, for example, Elaine Aron crafted this algorithm for rest, where she said you need to have at least 8 to 10 hours in bed. Not all of it needs to be sleep, but you want to give it enough time so that at least 7 to 8 of those hours could have been sleep. You need to have at least 1 to 2 hours that's restful wakefulness. So a walk where you're reflecting or meditation. You need a full day off every week that has no plans. Then you need at least 6 weeks off a year. Doesn't have to be consecutive, but over the course of the year, at some point, there was the equivalent of 6 weeks taken off. Or no, at least 4 weeks, excuse me. It wasn't six, it was four. So at least a month taken off at the end of the year, some combination of days off. Now, not everyone has that available to them, but she was talking, this is primo. This is the golden standard. And when I do the math and I think about my own experience, I have to admit she's right. So whatever your algorithm is, there's flex here, but think like a city planner. You know, what we often do, especially in the US, if we see a plot of land, we think I can build something on that. But we fare well or fare better when we think about how to be more strategic. Now we're moving into how to communicate that. Because it's one thing to know your boundary, and that requires a lot of work. It requires a lot of experimentation. It requires a lot of like kind of strategizing. You know, just knowing your own preferences can be hard enough, especially when you're an HSP, because you're so attuned to what other people want. And there's a certain amount of satisfaction that we get when we please another person. And when I say we, I now mean all humans, except maybe the sociopaths and possibly the narcissists. But, you know, for the rest of us, most people, most of the time, would prefer to please other humans than they would prefer to displease them, all things being equal. So if you get satisfaction in satisfying another person, you're having to weigh that against the potential cost that it is going to elicit from you to satisfy them in that way. So that's not always an easy equation to draw. It's not always clear. Sometimes the sacrifice is well worth it. Like, I'm willing to give up my blank in order to make you happy because your joy is so delicious, that it's worth it. Sometimes we run that equation and it's just, we've overridden our own wants and needs too often so that now it's creating a deficit. It's not always clear. So once the first step is getting better about identifying what is okay and what is not okay in a multiple in multiple arenas in our lives. The next space we need to occupy though is, okay, great, I know what I want, but now how do I say it? This now moves into the realm of communication styles. So there's four types of communication. There's passive communication, there's aggressive communication, there's passive-aggressive communication, and there's assertive communication. Now I'm gonna, the easiest way to put this is that passive is you matter, I don't. Aggressive is I matter, you don't. Passive-aggressive is I matter, you don't, but I don't wanna own that, so I'm just gonna make my disdain really clear, but I'm not gonna tell you why. That's everyone's favorite. And then assertive is I matter, you matter. But there's actually, so this was Kim Scott. She wrote a book called Radical Candor. She got kind of made fun of, and apparently in the show Startup, she got, like, it was used as a satire or a, I don't even remember. But here's what I'll tell you. She managed to put these four concepts in XY axis, which just made my brain delighted. So I'm like, oh, I get it. So what she is able to say is, okay, on the x-axis, there's avoidance and then there's engagement. So all the way to the left, you have avoidant. All the way to the right, you have engagement. On the y-axis, you have indifference all the way up to empathy. She used different terms for all of this, by the way. She in her terminology, it was challenge directly and care personally. I'm just using different terms and I'm trying to kind of move away from her specific terminology. So, but just know that it's inspired by her book. So if you are engaging with someone and showing empathy, that's the realm of assertive communication. That's where you're able to say, you matter and I matter. I can empathize with the other person's point of view and still be clear about my own wants and needs. If you are willing to engage, but you're kind of indifferent, you don't care about them, that is more aggressive. I matter, you don't. I can be clear about my point of view, but I'm unable or unwilling to see the other person's perspective. Now on the x-axis, now you're going into avoidance. So if you're avoiding someone, but you're still showing empathy, that's passive communication. That's you matter, I don't. I'm agreeing with others to avoid conflict, even though I do in fact have a different point of view. So I have a preference. I'm just not willing to tell you what it is because I'm so afraid of conflict that I prefer to be quiet and avoid the conflict as opposed to make my feelings known, even if that means having an uncomfortable conversation. So why does this piece kind of matter? This is something Brené Brown, I'm going to return to her. She said, anytime you have resentment, you can be rest assured it is because there was a boundary that you did not enforce somewhere. The resentment you are feeling is a fault of yours, not a fault of theirs. They may have passed a boundary, but you didn't enforce it. Most of the time it's because we're in this avoidant arena. And then everyone's favorite is, I'm avoidant and I'm indifferent. So that's the passive aggressive. I matter, you don't, but I don't want to own that. So I'm unwilling or unable to articulate my wants or needs directly, but I am making my disdain obvious. So these are kind of the four ways that you can interact with people. Ideally, when you're exhibiting, like when you're trying to communicate a boundary, you want to be in that upper right quadrant. You want to express empathy while also being engaging, like engaging someone directly with what you need, but still showing empathy. And what that looks like is you use a lot of I statements. I feel, I want, I need. There's eye contact, or at least a willingness to look in their direction. Volume of voice that can easily be heard, so it doesn't startle others, but it's clear, it's crisp. You can speak with ease, so there's not a lot of ums and You can listen without interruption. You can clearly state needs and wants, a clear no and a clear yes. Willing to compromise and negotiate when it's appropriate. You can stand up for your own rights. You can disagree with what's being said when there is an alternate opinion. You're able to defend yourself when you're blamed for something and you know you're not at fault. And you're able to maybe even defend others when they're not at fault. And you're also able to own when, in fact, at the end of that conversation, you determine, maybe, in fact, I am at fault. To be able to communicate assertively, it's helpful if you know what your values are. This is another element of boundaries, because again, this circles back to, okay, but how do I communicate what my needs are if I don't know what they are? Well, if you're feeling foggy, a place to start would be with your values. What are your core values? And examples could be acceptance, achievement, altruism, goals, cooperation, connection, joy, it's like, I, for example, value my relationships, I value my health, I value personal growth. Like, I think I also value my independence. Those are the things going on right now. And there are many times where those will be in conflict. So I value my independence and I value my relationships. That's going to be a perpetual tug of war. I value my health and I value my relationships. Those two things may frequently be in a tug of war. Or maybe I value my health and I value my independence, and there may become a time where I need to lean on the help of others and I won't want to. So if I know what my values are, that can really help me to define what is okay and what's not okay. But it's important to remember that a core value is not necessarily always your friend. This is the piece a lot of people forget about with core values. They assume that, oh, if I value my relationships, that's always good. Not necessarily. Because I might value my relationships so much that I lose myself. The shadow side of valuing your relationships is codependency. Or if I value my health, that seems like a perfectly reasonable core value to have. But what if I'm so fixated on my own physical health that I'm neglecting my relationships? Ultimately, it's going to be a problem. So being clear about your core values and then also being willing to inquire about all aspects of those values. And if I were to kind of put this into a boundary setting tool, this was adapted from Cheryl Richardson. She made it really plain and simple. When you're trying to set a boundary, you can kind of preemptively do this by saying, okay, what am I willing to say yes to? What am I willing to defend against? So I will say yes to blank. So I will say yes to those things that are in my core values, those things that I'm really excited about. I will say no, or others may not, blank. Like, what are things that I am certain are not okay? I can ask for blank. I will guard my time and energy by blank. So again, this is a boundary setting tool that Cheryl Richardson put together. So all of that having been said, there were a lot of visuals that were in this particular podcast that I was using, or I was getting informed by. So, and I kind of just threw all of this at you relatively quickly. So I highly recommend, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, man, I kind of wish I could see the visuals, I would love to be able to ask questions. You've got a few options. So first, I am going to be recording, putting this recording, or a link of it rather, in my online community. So if you go to my website, thehealthysensitive.com, there's one little icon that says group coaching, and that's where you can get into the online community. It no longer has a paywall. I had a paywall up for a short period because my concern was that people would just willy-nilly wander and meander in and then end up not contributing in any meaningful way. But what I realized is I'm also charging people for something that I don't, this is a time where so many people are demanding subscriptions, and there's so many of us trying to be really conscientious about how many we take on, and I thought, oh shoot, this is getting ridiculous. So the paywall is done, and if at any point in time that becomes a problem, like people meander in that really don't belong there, I'll just deal with it by enforcing a boundary. So I was relying on a paywall to do my boundaries for me, and I realized maybe that's not wise. So again, www.thehealthysensitive.com. This particular podcast will live there. But in addition to that, I host a meetup group. I mentioned that earlier. Every last Wednesday of the month. That is going to be, it's worth mentioning. Even though this is an evergreen podcast session, so it might not be applicable to those hearing it 2 years later, if you're even listening. So, but it's always the last Wednesday of each month. That means as of the recording of this podcast, that would be August 30th from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. Pacific time. And that is a virtual space, and you can find me on meetup.com. So that's where the live events happen. I mention that because what I always do is I record the first 30 minutes. And so I let folks know, hey guys, put yourself on mute, take your video off. If you don't want to be recorded, you won't be, provided that there's no questions that you ask or what have you in that first 30 minutes. And I record all of this content and you see the visuals. That recording then stops. And then the discussion part is not recorded. So that is the meetup section where we can kind of talk about these things. You can ask me questions. I can refine the material so that it's a little like, you know, I can add more juice if it's helpful or add more content. And then what I do is take the recorded portion, that 30-minute starting sequence, and I put it in the online community. So after August 30th, if you are listening to this particular podcast and it is after August 30th of 2023, you can just go to my online community and you'll see the recording of all of the same content with the visuals. Plus, you'll get to see my silly cartoonish face. So there's that too. Okay. I think I did it all. So in terms of next steps, I now am anticipating being able to launch a podcast at least once a month. I'm hoping for twice a month because now I'm in a better groove and I've got some systems in place and I've got some, yes, better boundaries. So I'm very excited about what's coming down the pipeline, and please do stay tuned because I will be giving updates about what's going on in the second business that I'm launching. And God, it's taking so much out of me not to tell you about it. I'm just so freaking excited. Anyway, I hope you have a fabulous rest of your day. Thank you so much for listening and for your patience, if you even had to have patience, because you probably weren't worried about me not producing podcasts. But I was. I felt like I was neglecting my people. Okay, that's enough. Thank you, everybody. Bye.